And good evening, all.
Radio.
Amen to that. And good evening, good afternoon, and good morning, depending on your time zone. And welcome, everyone, to the very, very first Nightlight Matrix. Welcome, light workers, light body energies, seekers of the light, watchers, wardens, indigos, soothsayers, mystics, questers, and querents, journeymen and journeyers, seekers, star children and philosophers, and all those who are seeking reason and magic in these times of awakening, evolution, and, of course, transformation. I'm Barb DeLong, your host, and along with Jeannie and our guest tonight, who has yet to call in, Lynn Buss, I invite you to come in out of the mainstream and gather around this nightlight in the darkness and confusion of the times. This show represents a sort of pit stop on your cosmic journey, so sit back, share your light with other light-minded people, and gather for a time to be sheltered from the storms of evolution and change. This is my own very small oasis in the turmoil that we call creation. Share with us your light. We'll share ours with you. And with any luck, we can generate enough light to not only light our ways, but provide light enough for others who are seeking as well. These journeys that we are on began a very, very long time ago and will continue long after this lifetime has faded into memory. So gathering together, as we do every week, generates energy that can and is drawn on by countless others. Coming together and blending our lights creates energy that serves not only ourselves, but humanity as well. If you'd like to learn more about me, I invite you to visit my website, barbaradelong.com. Ton of information there, links to everything that I'm involved in, and gives you an idea as to where I'm going to be from time to time. The other show that I do, which most of you know about, is Nightlight, and that is on every Friday from 4 to 6 on Blog Talk Radio here. And it is a show where we share spiritual inspiration, wisdom, and we do my favorite, free readings. This Friday is going to be a special one because I have a special guest this Friday. James Luce is going to be on with me. He's an amazing man, and I highly encourage you to call in because he's just a, well, he's just a kick to have on, and I thoroughly enjoy him. But tonight, I have probably one of my most favorite people in the whole world. I have been a fan of Lynn Buss's since I discovered his book, Numerology for the New Age. I used up at least one, if not two or three, of the book. I read them until, and used them, figuring out my different numbers and what the numbers meant and how it affected my life until I had worn them out. I loaned a whole bunch that never got returned, and it's a book that I have sworn by ever since it was published, and I probably had to be one of the very first people that ever bought it, I think. This is an amazing man. He's served more than half a century studying, teaching, and counseling in the field of symbols, cycles, and numbers. He's well qualified to be one to outline the journey and help show you the way, and he has been practicing professional numerologist for a very, very long time. He's written, I believe, over 14 books, and my favorite, of course, is Numerology for a New Age. He has a fabulous, fabulous website. You should all definitely check that one out. It's called Forever Numerology. And it's a phenomenal website because it gives you a calculator that will actually calculate all of the different numbers for your personality number and your life number and your integrated number and your karmic number and your soul number. And then, of course, the book gives you wonderful insight into what they mean and how to relate them to your life. In his teaching, he reveals the psychology, cosmology, and spirituality of numerology. And to him, numbers are not just a static set of numbers or symbols. Rather, they're like cosmic chords of sound and light that help make up the rhythms of the cosmic dance. His new book, The Heart of Numerology, which has just now, actually since I read it, become even my more favorite book, than Numerology for the New Age. The Heart of Numerology was written from the most spiritual place I can imagine. He has sort of reached out and touched the spiritual aspect of everything and brought it into play within this book. I found this book not only educational and fascinating, but spiritually nurturing, and certainly it did open up new levels of awareness every here and there. I'm going to bring him on now so that I can, you know, I don't bring guests on until I have flattered them tremendously. So, hi, Lynn, are you there?
I am. Can you hear me?
I can hear you just fine. You're coming through loud and clear.
Oh, good. Okay. This is my first experiment with Skype, so I'm not too familiar, but looks good from this end.
Well, so far so good. I was just explaining how your new book, The Heart of Numerology, to me is for some reason it feels almost like it was written from a more spiritual place than Numerology for a New Age, if that was possible. And I just find it so inspiring that it's just phenomenal.
Well, I'm very pleased with it. I think that from my point of view, I can explain that, and I've done that in the preface by saying that when I wrote Numerology for the New Age, a lot of it was intuitive and I guess you could say channeled, in the sense that information came that wasn't just my experience. You know, it was inspired in moments. And I had a vision that when it came out, it would be a big thick book, about 500 pages, and have a very authoritative feeling. And when it came out, it was like 186 pages, and they priced it at $11 or something like that. And I didn't understand. I was really disappointed, and it's taken me all these years to finally see that original vision come true, which has in this volume. And what I say as an author is that I wrote it then, and I had a vision, and I foresaw a lot of things, but I hadn't experienced these things. Uh-huh. So it's taken me 50 years to kind of go through a lot of life experience and cosmic experience and personal experience and spiritual experience. And I think that's what makes this book really valuable, is that it comes from a perspective of experience as well as vision. And so go ahead.
Well, my philosophy has always been that a teacher can't be effective if they haven't lived the lessons they're trying to teach. And this book, it's so very clear that you really have the experiential material behind the wisdom that you're sharing. So, and in your, it was either the preface or the introduction, you know, somebody asked me, because I run on and on about this book. I think it's fabulous. And somebody said to me, okay, so what can numerology do for you? And in someplace in your book, I found a quote that said, it numerology takes you from being an observer to circumstances to a conscious conscious participant. And it gives you greater insight, actually, into what is occurring within your life, so that you can deal with it, you know, deal with it and handle it so much better. And I just have been blown away by it. When first I picked up your very first book, I went into, you know, all of the calculations and discovering what the different soul numbers and you know, you have a big four. You want to explain what the big four numbers are?
The big four is essentially, you know, interesting you use that phrase, what can numerology do for you? It's a title I've been using for lectures recently. And and so I often start by saying these are some of the things it's done for me, but and we'll talk about that a little bit tonight since we have time, but the big four, you know, most of us, when we get into these things, we're interested in ourselves, right?
Right.
We're interested in our life, relationships, job, love, that sort of thing. And I was no different. I was introduced to numerology in 1964 and haven't stopped searching since then. So you start by your own chart. And the basic four, you start with the full name at birth. First, middle, and last name. And if you have more than one middle name or several middle names, you include all of those and you spell that out. And then you give a numerical value to each of the letters in that name. And then you add those across and you get a total. So the four primary numbers are the number from the full name, all of the letters in the name at birth. And then you take the value or the total for the vowels only, and then the consonants only, and then the fourth one is derived from the month and day and year of birth. So I'd like to explain that a little bit. There, in one of the things that's a little bit frustrating about numerology is that there is not a common nomenclature. You know, like in astrology, there's pretty much an agreement on the different definitions and that sort of thing. It's a little bit different in numerology in that people take these four numbers and there are various names and ways of looking at it. And in fact, I introduced a completely different set of definitions or terms. So I call the total of the full name at birth, the integrated self number. And then the number of the vowels I call the soul number. The number of the consonants I call the personality number. And then the number from the month and day and year of birth, I call the life number. And I think you may have mentioned briefly, I also have a background in therapy. So, you know, I look at this in terms of personal growth and in terms of personality. Most of us have problems, right? That's why we're in this dimension. We have karma, we have dysfunction, we have fear, we have guilt, we have ego, we have pride, or combinations of those, or various sorts of things that get in the way of our growth. Most of us who are in this work, and I'm sure most of your listeners kind of understand that, and we've made a decision to kind of work those problems out and work through our fears and work through our dysfunction. And as we do, we become more clear, and then the number of the vowels I call the soul number.
Okay.
And the personality number then gives us a clue about the it does not attempt to describe the entire personality. It focuses rather upon a specific lesson or what we chose in this lifetime as a primary lesson, and gives us guidelines about understanding the complications of that lesson and possible ways to work through that. The soul number gives us clues as to the pattern or the choice or the lesson of the soul. And as we become more clear in our personality, or as we work through, you know, what we call our problems or work out our issues, then the qualities of the soul come through our personality more clearly and more cleanly. And then as they work together, this leads to what I call the awareness of the integrated self. So the integrated self is more what we are striving to be. It's sort of an ideal that we are reaching to achieve. It again gives us clues as to possible assets or strategies or opportunities to maximize our consciousness. So the name gives us clues more of an analysis or understanding of self, kind of like having a natal astrology chart done. Very similar, I think, in the information, although a different way of going about it. Then the month and day of and year of birth added together, I call it the life number or the life path. And the life number, again, it gives us clues as to the primary lesson or challenge or opportunity that life is going to continue to repeat and reoccur to kind of bump us on the head and wake us up and help us become focused so that we become more aware of ourselves and then work through these issues and become a self-aware and then cosmic aware being. How does that sound?
Sounds phenomenal. And I know I spent, you know, like you said, you pick up the book and you really take a look at, you know, you calculate your numbers and you figure out, okay, do these describe me? Is this what, you know, is going on in my life? And I have found what you've gotten here, what you've gotten as far as I can tell by just applying it to my own life, that you're incredibly accurate. And it's more than just seeing a description of who you are and how you seem to be impacting your reality. It's an idea as to, you know, okay, where might my weaknesses be and what are the things that I might want to be working on? But you know, it yes, we're all here to get better and to work on aspects of our characters and stuff, but also the numbers do, I think, give you an idea as to where your strengths are and where your possibly your greatest creativity is, or what inclinations you might have that might be wonderful ways for you to experience this reality. It's certainly something to use to help you overcome or to address your issues, but it isn't just a problem solver. It's also a validation of some of the joy that you have in your life as well.
Yeah, absolutely. So you asked then, well, what can it do for me? So the way I kind of look at it, we start with ourself because we are, you know, kind of self-centered. That's how humans are, and that's kind of why we're here and what kind of what we're working out in this dimension. But as you work with the numbers, then you begin to understand yourself more, you begin to work through these issues, life becomes lighter and more joyful and more humorous and more fun and more productive. You have more healthy relationships. And then you begin to look at the world around you, and then you can use numbers then in terms of the interaction between you and someone else. So there's what I call interpersonal numerology, where you compare your numbers to family or spouse or your coworker or a supervisor or a school teacher or your lover or children. And it helps you to understand, you know, in a more conscious way, and gives you tools again to communicate more completely with those around you. And as that world becomes more harmonious and your relationships and your career and your life is fulfilling, then you begin to expand and you begin to look out at the world around you, meaning your relationship to the world around you, to nature and to the planet, into the cycles of the planet, and a more intimate relationship. And then if you continue to expand, you begin to become aware of the cycles and the dance between your planet and the other planets in the system, and the cycles and the opportunities and the vibrations, so that you can dance with those cycles more consciously and more openly. And then if you continue that dance, you become aware that there is a cosmic dance going on, and I call that the beginning of cosmic consciousness, and an awareness of far beyond, you know, of forces and a greater force and the process of creation and the creator and the laws of the universe. And you dance then with what I call your inner self or your inner core. So when you ask what can numerology do for you, it's infinite and unlimited. It depends what you aspire and what you would like to have, and it can assist you in your journey as far as you want to go.
Well, it really is an amazing tool. And, you know, I get so many people, especially the ones that call the show for the reading, asking me, you know, what should I do with my life? And I don't know what to do, and I don't know where my passions are. And this is a wonderful tool to help people to determine where their gifts do lay or lie, where their gifts are. and it actually sounds as though it could even be a wonderful way to choose a career.
There are numerologists that really specialize in that and have, you know, taken it to refine that particular facet of numerology and use it as a career counseling tool. And I do to some extent, along with intuition. And for sure, that is, you know, one possible aspect, because numbers are symbols, and they simply, it's, the study of numbers is the study of cycle and rhythm and vibration. And it's all a dance, and it's all awareness. So if you focus in that area, then it's going to help awaken an insight as to what potentials and possibilities and talents and abilities that you might have that you are not using, and how then you might focus them into something that is applicable and meaningful and productive in life. So that is certainly one application, is a career path.
And I think the
and
other
then
thing
what
that...
I call also then you there's that level, and then more and more what I'm seeing is what I call people are awakening and wanting to know what I call the inner work or the work of the soul. Or we're asking, you know, what is my father's work? Or, you know, kind of a higher spiritual work, you know, not necessarily displacing the things we're doing in this dimension, but a greater kind of soul destiny or purpose. And I'm seeing that a lot now, and I'd like to talk about that sometime during the show, how that has come about.
Let's go into that now, because that certainly is something that everyone is questioning and everybody is seeking. I mean, yes, of course, people are struggling with their day-to-day reality, but usually the people that are listening to this show, especially, have the awareness that you know there is another purpose to this lifetime on top of just surviving it, and destiny is really an important thing, and so many people just want to make sure they're right on the right they're on the right pathway to achieve the destiny that's been outlined for that they outlined for themselves before they came into this reality.
Well, okay, so what I would like to do, if I could, is set that up a little bit by talking about my own background. I started in this, I was introduced in 1964. A friend of mine gave me a book called Your Days Are Numbered by Florence Campbell, which is still a classic. You know, the language is a little bit outdated. It's reflection of the times, but her insight and her contribution is just invaluable. And interestingly enough, I looked at it and I said, well, you know, she worked out my numbers and I read through the pages and I said, well, that's kind of interesting, but I don't know. And then later on, I can't remember if it was that day or later. Anyway, I picked up the book and I looked at the numbers, and she had calculated it incorrectly.
Oh,
so
no.
Then I did it again, and then I went, whoa, okay, you know. And so, and I've never stopped searching. So in my own quest, then, you know, I began to do my own work. I began to use numerology as a counseling and intuitive tool. And throughout, you know, and I've mentioned many times in my work, being the secretive Scorpio that I am, I'm always looking for hidden things and secrets and things that people are hiding. And I've been particularly good at kind of digging into unconscious areas and finding things that are in the way and bringing those to people's attention. And so, you know, early in my work, I would finish my reading, and I heard this so many times, they would say, well, that's very insightful, and that's very helpful, and that's pretty accurate. What do I do now?
Yeah.
Well, I don't know. That's not my job. Do something about it. But it was really frustrating because I would see hidden areas and you know, unconscious things, and it really frustrated me. And for some of the early years, I would carry those concerns, you know, and I would worry about my clients and wonder how they're doing. And I finally realized, well, you can't do that, you know, because after several thousand, that's quite a burden to try to keep track of everyone. But what I'm leading up to saying is that led me into the healing arts, and that led me eventually into counseling. And I became a therapist. I practiced as a psychotherapist for years. And then I realized that, you know, it's a wonderful tool, but without the spiritual element, it's not complete. And so, my work expanded into what I call synergy session, and I kind of call it psycho-spiritual therapy because it included the evolution of the soul and our connection to other dimensions and other worlds and reincarnation and karma and that
uh-huh.
sort of thing. And so just I know I seem to be wandering, but it will help you to understand why I have insight in the numbers. And that is because in the process of the synergy session in the early years, what I would do is I would start with, you know, okay, what is it in your life that's not working right now? What is it that's happening that you do not like? What is not working? And what is in the way? And then we would start there, and I would take them back through their life to, you know, key points in their life, like, you know, around 11, 12, 13, which is the onset of, adolescence and transition from child into adulthood. And we would look at the issues and conflicts then and kind of work them out and do exercises to work through the anger or the fear or the conflict with parents, whatever. And then I would go back, you know, to like 6 years old and 3 years old and 2 years old with the formation of personality and how did your parents react when you begin to assert your own identity and your own little personality, and age one when you begin to stand up and walk and how their reaction in the world around you, and then back through the time in the womb. And then in the beginning, I would take them back to the moment of birth so they could kind of see what was happening as they came in and the interaction between the parents and the kind of an understanding of the of getting into their karma and their stuff, as we call it in the trade. And then that was very effective, but there just were still unresolved issues. So then I ended up going back to the moment of conception, where the soul came into the moment, you know, as the parents were in the process of conception and the soul came into that environment, and then allowed the individual to look at the conflicts and the possibilities of that in their world, as well as the picture of the soul and the vision of the soul. And then we would kind of work out where they got hooked into their parents' karma and drama and that sort of thing. Well, that was much more effective, but still there were other issues. And then, of course, that took me into other lifetimes and other dimensions and other planets and that sort of thing. So what I'm leading up to saying is that it gave me a deeper insight into the roots and origins of these issues. And then in my own life, one of the turning points in my life was I had been in this work for many, many years, and I had done, you know, meditation and spiritual practices, and I traded a lot of my work with other practitioners. So I had hundreds of hours of therapy and Rolfing and Traeger and massages and my aura balanced and my chakras cleansed and my meridians cleaned and my karma cleared and all these different, you know, systems of healing and cleansing, all of which I recognize, and each has its own place.
Oh, yeah, there's so many modalities that it's amazing.
Yeah, but if I could, just the turning, one of the biggest turning points came, I was sitting in a dentist's office, and I picked up a magazine, and I was reading, and it was about adult children of alcoholism, and there was a description that we call the laundry list of characteristics of children that grow up in a family where alcoholism is an issue. And I had said all my life, yeah, well, my father was an alcoholic, and I never had any trouble denying that, but people would say, well, how did that affect you? I'd say, well, it didn't bother me because he left when I was a year old and I never saw him much, so, you know, no problem. And wrong. So I realized then I was reading these lists and characteristics, and that opened up my understanding of myself to my own issues and how many things that I had hidden and the pain and the anger and these sort of things. So as I began to work that out and combine that with the spiritual practices, then I began to see a lot of these patterns in numbers and how certain forms of neurosis applied to certain numbers and how certain dysfunctional patterns. And I think that's where you can see the difference between numerology for the new age and the heart of numerology is the depth of insight. And whereas I had a kind of intuitive grasp of those things when I wrote numerology for the new age, now I've worked with them and processed them with thousands of people and have given them a tool that allows them to see when they, you know, when they work through the fear and the insecurity and the neurosis and the anger and the guilt, there's a whole another world and a whole infinite source of possibilities and opportunities. And I think that's what makes it a much more complete volume now and adds to a much greater picture and fullness in understanding these things.
Well, yeah, and I think having a hint, having a just some indication as to, you know, what is your destiny pathway? What are you here for? What is the purpose of your of this lifetime? On top of the fact that of course, you know, we know that we're here to grow and get better and be spiritual and learn to love one another and have a greater understanding of the cosmic consciousness and all of that stuff. But there feels like there has to be something else too, and indeed there actually is. So that I think that most people through numerology can find what their destiny number is and you know, have some indication, some small hint as to why are they here. I mean, we're not just here to go lifetime after lifetime after lifetime and hopefully gathering in, you know, stuff and becoming a better spirit in the soul. There's more purpose to it than that. And I think that humanity as a whole is coming to a time and a point where people are beginning to understand that, and they're beginning to understand that while we are on we are spirits on a human journey, but as a species we're on a journey together, and as a planet we're on a journey together, and you know there are lots of journeys going on here, not just our own small individual ones, but we are part of a greater one as well.
Yeah. And that's now that I've set the background, that's exactly what I'm leaning up to saying from a numerological point of view. And what I've observed in my practice is, you know, over all the years, there have been these moments where, you know, of alignments and convergences and millenniums and this sort of thing. And I've listened and watched, and they've come and gone, and there have been changes, and we are awakening. And the big one was the 2012, you know, and 2012 kind of caught my attention like it did a lot of people, because so many books were written and, you know, a lot of these catastrophic and end of the world scenarios and all this sort of thing. But I began to see in my work, I do what I call a progress chart, and it's somewhat like having a progress chart in astrology, only you do it through numbers and through the progression of the name. But what I'm leading up to saying is that I usually look out 4 or 5 years ahead when I work with people, and around 2008, 2009, I begin to see that in virtually everyone that I worked with, and then I became more aware of it, of this, I saw it and I kind of, you know, noted it, but it didn't stick until a lot of the other literature about the Mayan calendar and the end of the world and new eras and this sort of thing. And then I began to look more closely. But what I have seen in my work is that, and this, I saw it coming and now I've watched it, and that is that I began to see between pretty much 2010, but particularly 2011 to 2013, in almost every progress chart that I did, there was new, you know, looking at it numerologically, an indication of a huge transition in that person's life. And I saw this over and over and over again, and I'm still seeing it. So I looked at it and I said, okay, that suggests to me that the change that's coming is not only individual, but it's collective, as you said. You know, it's affecting humanity. And then looking at all these other scenarios and other teachers and, excuse me, other information, I began to realize it not only is a human change, it's a planetary change, it's a systemic change, which means it's affecting our entire solar system. And to some extent, it's a galactic change in that it's affecting our entire galactic consciousness. And so, you know, I looked at it, 2012 was not the year that seemed to stand out in my work. It was 2013, and now we're in it, and I'm seeing it, and I feel that this is one of the most significant years I've seen in terms of possibilities and the consciousness that's coming in now, that you know, I can see it in my work, and I can feel it. I'm doing things within myself to become adjusted to, there is a evolution of humanity taking place, and it's a huge point of transition. There's information now coming in from other dimensions, from other worlds. I do think that very soon we will have contact with
I think you're saying, or he was going to say, extraterrestrials. He seems to have drifted off here. I'm sure he'll reconnect himself in a minute or two. And I have to agree with him. The element here of 2012 coming into 2013 has been profound. It's been a remarkable change, and the Mayans had it right, and anybody that you know really looked into the Mayan stuff would understand that it was not the end of the world, but the world as we know it was the end of an era. And oh my God, has it been the end of an era? The changes that have gone on, the shifts in consciousness, the opening of people's understanding of life as we know it is just amazingly phenomenal. And you know, I have to agree with Lynn on this, that it wasn't really the 2012 that was, you know, the big thing. It was this year. It was this year that we're in now and that we are struggling to get through. And look at just how humanity as a whole is going through all sorts of shifts and awarenesses and expansion. It's just absolutely profound. And you know, when you look at all of the things that are happening around the world, it's almost as though in some ways we're actually out of control. And it really does beg the question: are we doing a good job or not? And you know, I think many people on an individual scale are doing phenomenally well. I think we are finding people who are God, almost martyrs. They're amazing. And then we have people, you know, who are so out of control that they do horrific things to their fellow man. And it's a little scary. It's a matter of, I think humanity in many ways is at this point in time just slightly out of balance, and will hopefully be coming back into balance. Lynn is one of the things that I love about his work. I think he did get dropped from Skype, but you know, I'm pretty sure he'll get back on in just a minute or two. So I will grab the opportunity to put a little bit of my stuff out there. He said that he felt that we were going to very, very soon have contact with extraterrestrials, and I would tend to agree with him. Is he still connected? Jeannie said, but he's not talking. Lynn, are you there? Okay. Yeah, when he called in, Jeannie, he said he was on Skype. And I understand, I know there's a telephone number there, but he said he was on Skype. So let me go back to extraterrestrials. I think he'll call back in or he'll find another way of getting through, because he has so much to say and he's such a fascinating man. And one of the other things I want to get into with him as soon as he does reconnect, hopefully, are the master numbers, because he goes into the master numbers and he expands them. The ones that I am most familiar with are, Jeannie. Go ahead and disconnect and let him call back in. Excuse me for just our technicalities here. Incredible. This is Blog Talk Radio, folks. This happens all the time. So happily, I am to a place here where he did mention the extraterrestrials, and I agree with him. I think that more and more and more we are being what's the word I want to use? We're seeing more and more of the UFO stuff out there, and it feels to me as though they are getting us ready, and I think we've been ready for a very long time, but they're more than ever getting us ready so that there can be contact. And let's face it, there is something out there. It's, you know, we are not alone. Anyone who has seen a UFO or experienced a sighting or has been in the presence of something that was, you know, paranormal, and we're not alone. We do not. Our place in this universe is very, very small, and there's a great deal going on all over the place. We are very small, itty bitty, little, infinitesimal. I mean, we're kind of like the Horton Hears the Who. We're the Who's, and it's something that I don't think a lot of us, you know, really fully comprehend. We look around and we figure, you know, we're the master race, and I don't think that's the case. I think we are just coming into our infancy and coming into awareness, and it's going to take us a while before we ascend to a place where we're even, you know, eligible to join those other species that are out there. And I'm looking forward to it. I saw a UFO when I was in college. It landed on my campus, and it was bizarre and unusual and unique. And I was 18, all of 18, and the experience of seeing a UFO that closely changed my life profoundly. I think that in many ways it was what set me on the spiritual pathway, because the ship itself could not possibly have been, you know, made by us. The way that it rose out of the air, the way that it was gone in the flash of a second. You know, just didn't have technology like that. And I think more and more when we are exposed to the fact that, you know, we don't know it all. We don't have it all. We aren't in control of it all. Does sort of, in many ways, put us in our place. I think that if you look at the science fiction films out there, not the ones that scare us, but science fiction on a whole, usually it feels to me as though they're actually preparing us for what is yet to come, you know, not War of the Worlds type stuff, but just technology above and beyond what anything that we've got. And it feels to me as though we're coming into a time frame where it would be, I think they're actually already down here, to tell you the truth. I think that I don't believe that any extraterrestrial who was going to try to contact humanity would hit governments. I think they would basically, most probably, do something on a telepathic level. Lynn, if you can hear me, I think maybe you better hang up and try to call back in, because your microphone is open and we aren't hearing you. So, Jeannie, if you can disconnect so that he can do that, that would be really great. Oh, Jeannie's gone now too. Okay, well, it's you and me out there. So we're talking about numerology, and we're talking with Lynn Buss as he tries to get back in here. And I think the one thing that I am so fascinated with about his book, which I urge everybody to buy, because and I don't do this lightly. I don't really push things like this. But numerology for me has opened up doorways and perspectives and potentialities. And Just a little bit about how he describes it. He says, numerology is a symbolical study of rhythms, cycles, and vibrations. The exact origin is discreetly buried in the mist of time. If one were to be exact, it could be said that numerology has its origin before the beginning of time. In its most esoteric form, numerology simply reflects the tides and cycles of creation as set in motion by the Creator. It is related to astrology and also symbolic investigation, and both are concerned with the relationship of angles and vibrations resulting from the activities of celestial movements and the cycles of time, space, and evolution arising therefrom. So it's amazing. It is a science. And it began with people's earliest attempt to understand the relationship between the self and the cosmos. In recorded history, it's known that numbers were significant in Sanskrit of the ancient Hindu culture, and modern numerology in its evolution was also influenced by the Arabic system of numbers. Yet another important branch is the tradition and the symbolism of the Kabbalah. So this is an ancient, ancient, ancient form of being insightful. The Orient also has a rich tradition of giving the value to numbers, and the Bible is similarly laden with a profound history of symbolism based on numbers. And within history of these cultures is a wealth of yet undiscovered wisdom based on esoteric teachings of their numerical traditions. And interestingly, the individual most responsible for influencing the method of numerology in use today is Pythagoras, someone that I was not thrilled with in school, I might add. He was a Greek philosopher born between 600 and 590 BC, and he founded a school where the instruction of mathematics, music, astronomy, and philosophy were conducted in conjunction with esoteric wisdom. And he taught the relationship between people and the divine laws as reflected in mathematics of numbers. And it was from his philosophical strength that the study of numerology, as it is today, was established. So it's more than just playing with numbers. It's more than just calculating things and you know, kind of trying to put things together. It said there were two levels of teachings within the school, the exoteric and the esoteric, and today many of those students of old still exercise their interest in numbers. The exoteric students incline towards mathematics and science and often have little or no regard for the intuitive side of numbers. The esoteric students in today's world can be found working with numerology and sometimes very advanced in theoretical mathematics. Today, scientists and technologists are paying ever-increasing attention to the use of vibrations and frequencies, and this is true. It's stuff that they used to think were you know, they didn't mean anything, and now new knowledge of biorhythm cycles has made the public more knowledgeable about just how important it is to be aware of the cyclical patterns in our daily lives. Our body goes through all sorts of different rhythms and different I'm sorry, I didn't mean to jump like that, but it appears that our switchboard is jumping all over the place too. So I think Jeannie is back. At least I see her telephone number there. Let me pull her on. Let's see if she can find him. Hi, Jeannie, are you there? No Jeannie too. Okay. I think our switchboards are so messed up, it's unbelievable. Anyhow, this is, you know, the historical portrait provided is you know, short, but my gosh, it is just an amazing, numerology as it is more commonly practiced provides the means of understanding of cyclical patterns or qualities related specifically to the individual's personal life. And by understanding one's own particular rhythm, it becomes easier to flow with life. And that's true. That's very, very true. And through the study of numerology, we can become more attuned to our own permanent atom, or divine spark, it's often called, and realign with the dance of the cosmos. With such understanding, one can become the master of fate rather than a victim of destiny's circumstances. Its application is just as significant today as with the ancient seeker. In fact, its application may be more meaningful today in this age of rampant materialism and existential crises. So it is an amazing, amazing study. I think Lynn is back. Hi, Lynn, are you there?
Hey. Hello.
Hey, I've been reading from your book.
Oh, are we back together?
Yes, we're back together, and you dropped out just at one of the coolest times because you were talking about extraterrestrials, and I wanted to go along with you on that one.
Well, I think it's going to happen soon. I mean, we know that they've been here a long time. We know that it's been hidden from us, that there are, you know, clandestine things going on, and it would appear that soon that's going to all come out into the open, and we will begin to understand our place under the sun, so to say, but not just our sun, but the greater cosmic sun. Because you recall, I've taken a lot of criticism in earlier books because I started with the cosmology, and then came down to the human level. And, you know, particularly beginning students found that kind of overwhelming. But I did that because I'm sort of, my consciousness is sort of cosmic first, and it's taken me a long time to sort of become a human in one sense. And so in this one, you'll notice in Heart of Numerology, I put all of the pressing matters of this dimension first and the cosmology at the end for those who want to take that step and who are seeking to become more consciously aware of the, for lack of a better word, the more refined or the more delicate or the new nuances and new energies that are bombarding our planet, literally.
Yeah, I was going to, I did tremendously agree with you that the Mayans had it right, that 2012 was the end of an age and that 2013 was the beginning of a new age. And I totally go along with you. I am so amazed and inspired in a way as to how people's consciousnesses have shifted since the change of the year and how there is a greater openness to a lot of the spiritual aspects that once were had to be shrouded in mystery and had to be sort of hidden away a little bit. And it's just amazing how much more open and seeking people are for those aspects that are now becoming more accessible to everyone because they have expanded into a greater acceptance of a cosmic consciousness.
Well, I agree. I think that the mass consciousness in general is sensing something big and something different. And, you know, and if you're religious, there's an awakening of religious awareness and more people are going to churches and mosques and synagogues and praying and searching. If you're into New Age, you know, there's a reawakening, I think, of people who are meditating and contemplating and trying to figure it out. And, you know, if you look at the even scientific literature, that, you know, even in science, they're saying that we are receiving and we are being literally bombarded in some cases with frequencies, and they quite honestly don't know what it is. They don't know how to quantify it. They don't know what it is. And, you know, from a metaphysical point of view, we kind of know that it's just we are. It's the beginning of our sensory expansion and connection to more subtle energies, and we're going to be seeing a different range of colors, and we're going to be hearing a different range of tones and musical keynotes and rhythms and different forms of, you know, understanding energy and archetypes, and we're right on the threshold. And that's, I think that the study of numbers has helped me to understand that and to be more aware and working with that. And I'm in an enormous process of growth myself, you know, trying to adjust and to cleanse my body and to cleanse my mind and get my stuff out of the way, because I'm feeling that I'm supposed to be doing something bigger and better and newer. And it's just right around the corner, as with so many of us.
Oh yeah, and somebody did call in and asked a question that you know, you seemed to drop off the face of the earth before I could ask it, but I'll ask it now. They asked if the chakras had any relation to numerology, or if there was a connection between the chakra energy systems and numerology.
Well, yes, there is. Everything is connected. That's not my specialty. I don't have a specific set of chakra number relationships, but yes, it's all connected. If you look at when I present my public lectures on numerology, one of the first things I say is that numerology is one of the five primary symbolic systems. And these are numerology being one, astrology, the one that most of us are familiar with, the tarot, mm-hmm. Kabbalah, and the I Ching. And if you look at these esoterically, each of these are systems from different cultures with a slightly different perspective, but each of these, on an esoteric level, depicts the story of our descent out of spirit and into matter, and the lessons and the trials and tribulations of matter, and then overcoming the limitation of matter, and then the process of ascension back to our core, or what I call our eternal or spiritual heritage. And so all of these are intimately interwoven, and then when you understand that, and then along with the chakras and the colors and tones and vibration, it's all one. It's all one dance. So there are numerous avenues or paths to get to that process. Numerology is one of them. It is a symbolic system. And as you contemplate and study and meditate and work with the numbers, they take you through the symbol and into the dance itself. Now, I'm a ballroom dancer, and I'm using that metaphor more and more because I realize it's all a dance. It's all a constant, ongoing process of interaction of degrees and cycles and rhythm. And particularly the dance that I love is the Viennese waltz, because it's the Trinity, you know, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3. So you have the Trinity, and then you have the duality dancing with your partner. And as they say in ballroom dancing and other dancing, two becoming as one. So as you move in harmony together and the rhythm of the two becomes one, you become one.
Yeah.
And that's the guy that, did we leave each other again? I heard a beep.
Nope.
Am I still there?
Yeah, you're
okay.
Still here.
I've learned in dancing, and the clue to the whole thing is it's all rhythm, and it's all very simple, and that is there's a cycle that expands, there's a cycle that contracts, and there's a moment where they come together, and we call that the Tao, or the balance, or the union.
Yeah.
And so it's really very simple in that you're either pushing too hard and trying to force the rhythm or the cycle, or you're resisting and you're not, you know, you're behind the cycle, or you're just right. And they're talking about that. If you listen now to the cosmologists and scientists, they call it the Goldilocks principle. And it's funny because I used that analogy 30 years ago when I started teaching esoteric cosmology, and I used that very thing. You know, it's like, ew, this bed is too hard. Oh, this bed is too soft. Oh, this bed is just right.
Yeah.
And if that's what it comes down to in the end. It's very simple. You're either pushing too hard, or you're resisting, or you're just right. And in the end, that's where it's all very simple.
Yeah, I when talking to people, I often say, get out of your own way and go with the flow. You know, just find the rhythm of the universe and let it carry you. Don't try to make something happen. Allow something to happen.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And so numbers are just one of the symbolic ways of connecting and becoming more aware of the dance. And pretty soon you are the number. Because you are the rhythm, you are the dance. And so I say the same thing when I teach, you know, don't get caught in the number and forget the moment.
Right. Right. Sometimes you're so busy analyzing, you forget the experience. You do talk about something that I found fascinating when I was reading the book, and that is you go into master numbers, and of course I'm familiar with 11, 22, and 33, but you go all the way to 99, and I've never seen that done before.
Well, I've left it purposely vague because I've left it open for the individual to find their own path, but the clue is in the Tree of Life glyph, you know, that's in the book, and it's the Kabbalistic glyph.
Yeah.
And to be aware that this is a cosmic glyph, and it is associated, of course, with Kabbalah and with Judaism, but not to be restricted to a earthbound religion or system. It's just, it is a mathematical map, and it is a clue. If you study and contemplate the tree and the interaction, you'll find there the seven levels of consciousness, which, of course, do associate with the chakras and colors and mathematics and musical tones. Mm-hmm. But then you also have the 10 sephirot or spheres. And so then you have the paths, and between the two you have a total of 22 or 32, and this is the number of the major arcana in the tarot, and with the 32 you have the number of hexagrams in the I Ching. Mm-hmm. And so the master numbers comes from, as you go through the tree and through the different levels of consciousness, there's a lesson and an awakening with each of the levels and each of the spheres. And then you go through them again on another dimension, and that's where the master number consciousness comes in. And there are stepping stones and guidelines through the tree. And then as you master that next level, then comes the triple masters, you know, 111, 222, 333, 444, 555, 666, 777, 888, 999. That's the third time through, and then 1,000 theoretically is evolution and ascension, and you are gone, you know, to another dimension, another world, the Vedic evolution. I don't know, because I don't have a clear vision of that, but I'm sensing that we're on the threshold of that. So that's where the master numbers come from. And I'm vague on them because, quite honestly, they're still new to me, and you don't see too many master numbers. And it's the understanding comes along with this period that we are in of expanding and heightened consciousness, and part of that will be a mass awakening to what those numbers mean and how to utilize them more and to apply them in your life. I've given intuitive glimpses, and I'm studying them and trying to become more aware of them and make a more detailed map, but I don't have it yet. Maybe someone out there will contribute that.
Well, you know, I think, frankly, that you know, we're not meant to have all the answers, because if we had all the answers, there would be no purpose to the journey.
Well, at some point, I kind of agree with that, but
Well,
we're never going to have all the answers anyway, are we? I mean, there's so much out there that
there is, and I want to also bring in you talk about karmic numbers, and I think karma is something that people are throwing around, you know, quite a bit these days. You know, it must be karmic debt, and this must be karmic debt, and it has to be karma because I didn't do anything to deserve it this lifetime and stuff like that. And you do go into karmic numbers, and I found it fascinating because when I did my calculations and figured out what my karmic number was and what it was that I was actually missing from my name and stuff like that, damned if it wasn't just so dead on, it was embarrassing. I sat and laughed my way through the entire thing because you were right and it was so accurate. And I thought, and he got this from letters that were missing from my name. It was mind boggling.
Yeah, I've just seen it so many times in so many charts, and I've added something to this was an original contribution. I call it the karmic accumulation number.
Uh-huh.
And that's the one that amazes me, you know, because, I mean, that's one that came kind of intuitively, and I sit down periodically, and I go back, and I read numerology for the New Age, and there are parts of it where I say, damn, this is really good, you know? And it's not because I wrote it, because there's some things that I literally didn't understand or know, and they're just really brilliant, you know? And that's where the intuition or the knowledge beyond being ego or you and I comes. But the karmic accumulation, I've read that periodically too, and karmic accumulation is where you add together the different numbers missing and get a total, and then you look at that.
Mm-hmm.
And that also, people have just found that to be amazing. And I, you know, in my work with other people, I just go, wow. So it is a clue. It just, it sort of suggests, even if you don't believe in karma or reincarnation, it just sort of suggests an unconscious area that needs extra attention. And you can look at it that way, if you know. But personally, I do believe in reincarnation, and as I do these charts, I don't make any claims. You know, I will share with people what I see, and sometimes I do see very specific events and circumstances, and other times, and other histories, and other moments. So also, again, just by working with the symbol, it opens the door, and it may be, you know, we started out, well, what can numerology do for you? It may be that that is what will help someone out there that works with numbers, and it will open the door to those karmic clues, and then suddenly they begin to click in and get that information, and maybe they start to do very accurate past life readings or, you know, karmic counseling. That's what it is. It's a door opener, and it'll take you as far as you want to go. And I did mention, I think you were reading, I think from my book, because it said it can take you through time and before time.
Yes.
And people may say, well, that's a bit presumptuous. You know, well, how can you do that? Blah, blah. Well, I've taught cosmology now for 30 or 40 years. And it starts with, let me just acknowledge that work. It's my Bible. It's called Cosmic Doctrine, and it's by Dionne Fortune.
Mm-hmm.
Do you recognize her name?
Yes, I do.
She was a prominent kind of psychic and medium and metaphysical teacher in England, I think around the 20s and 30s and that era. And she wrote a lot of books on occultism and different things. And one of her books was specifically different, and that book is called Cosmic Doctrine. And in the cover, it says that this book was channeled, I think, in 1923. And it says in the cover that the information was received from an entity who, in a previous lifetime, was a world-famous philosopher. My personal feeling is that it was Pythagorean, that she was channeling the Pythagorean consciousness. That's just mm-hmm. my personal feeling. I don't have any, you know, scientific or evidential proof, factual way of supporting that, but just from the information and the impact on my life. And it starts with the unmanifest. And the unmanifest is described as, you know, that which is before manifestation or creation. And so I think of it sort of as the unconscious of God. And then out of manifestation comes the desire for creation or manifestation, and that's the first cycle. And there is an expansion, you know, and of first comes movement, and then light, and then sound. And then eventually there's a reaction to that expansion, and there's a contraction, and then eventually there's a reaction to that, and there's a third force, and that becomes the Trinity. And if you look at it symbolically, and I presented it in my work, it's like a gyroscope.
Uh-huh.
And those are the cycles. One of those cycles or rings expands, one of them contracts, and one of them keeps everything kind of working and in balance. And that is the prime trinity. And so I mentioned in the book and in the author's description that I've contemplated this book. I've read it hundreds of times. I've meditated, I've contemplated, I've prayed, I've searched, I've just been infinitely curious what this all means. And this was years ago that I was in in one of those searches, and someone was working with me and did kind of a regression. And in that regression, I fell through the center of the earth. Do you remember the Jodie Foster movie? It's been quite a few years now. Contact?
Yeah, of course I do.
Remember that?
Yes. Yes, I do.
And that big machine? Well, that actually is a pretty accurate portrayal of how the dynamics of creation work. That is far more accurate and real than people realize. And if you remember, she was dropped through the center and then went on that journey.
Yeah.
Well, I took a journey like that, only I went to the center of Earth and through that kind of gyroscopical moment, and I went out through almost like that, through wormholes and then into universes and the end of and then back and then whoosh. And I was taken back actually to what would essentially be the Big Bang or the moment of creation. You know, only it isn't as an observer, it was as a participant. And then coming out of that expansion and then again through, through the wormholes and time travels and into, universes and galaxies and out and in, and then finally I remember coming into this solar system and going through the different planetary schools and learning on the different planetary schools and then coming into Earth and starting my Earth sojourn. So that's why I think that this book also has a different sense of being alive and present rather than abstract and theoretical, because I've lived it. I took that journey as a living experience. And all I can say is I'd like to get back there. And I think that's what we all are longing for. You know, E.T. would really like to go home.
Yes, I can agree with you on that. I think that most of us, who are on, and everyone is on a spiritual journey. It's just a matter of how intently you're paying attention to it. And I'm lucky that I am retired and I can focus a great deal of my time and effort on the fact that this is a spiritual experience. Life as we know it is a spiritual experience, and the more that we live the spiritual philosophies that we have within us, the greater the experience we have as far as here on this earth plane and interaction with other people and all of the good stuff that's out there. And
yep.
And I have to say that first of all, this book is an amazing legacy that you have left humanity, and this book is easy to read. This book absolutely dances. It is something that you can easily get into. Numerology for a New Age was, well, the introduction was heavy. The rest of the book was easy.
Well, I look back now, and I was young, and I was immature, and it was a vision, And as I say, I hadn't lived it. And I didn't know how to express it. I didn't have the vocabulary. I didn't have the experience. And quite honestly, I read it sometimes, and I'm reading paragraphs, and it just goes off somewhere, And I'm the author, and I have, where in the world is that? Because I sensed it, but I hadn't been there.
Yeah.
And I think that what makes the new volume is it's a living experience, as best I can present it, and I think you will agree, it's much more present.
Oh, geez, yeah.
It's much more here. It's much less abstract and more living, and a little more human.
I would say so. And You know, what I find fascinating is that while numerology for the New Age was fun, and I thoroughly enjoyed it, and like I said, I wore out so many books, it was ridiculous. The heart of numerology has so many different levels to it now, while the fun part is still there. But there is a greater sense of a spiritual purpose to all of this than was in the first book. And, you know, as I have gotten older and as I have been able to apply my life lessons to the teachings that I'm involved in, I find that people are more attentive and absolutely more appreciative of a wisdom that is handed to them than they were 30, 40 years ago. And I think a great deal of it has to do with the fact that I have experienced most of the stuff that I share. And I try very hard to, if I haven't had a personal experience in some area, I usually say, well, you're beyond my credentials, but I can give you some good advice, maybe. So, and because, you know, while I have experienced a great deal, I haven't experienced everything. And there are some things that I really don't have any desire to experience this lifetime.
I don't think we can do it all in one lifetime. We each have an area of specialty. We each have an area of weakness. We each have an area of particular potential or talent or ability that's uniquely ours. And that's what I'm feeling within myself. There's still something yet left undone. One of the things I knew I had to do was get this book written. That was part of my destiny, because I saw that book 30 years ago when I wrote Numerology for the New Age, and that part is done. And I thought, okay, well, that was it. Well, that's not it. I'm sensing I've got something more to do, and I'm going through a lot of trial and tribulation because I just hit a whole nother level of depth of my own darkness and stuff coming out. And, you know, gone through some darkness of the soul crisis and healing crisis. But I'm seeing that, I mean, virtually almost every one of my clients that I'm contacting me now are just on the threshold of connecting to that new, what, you know, for lack of a better word, new dimension, new awareness. It is so close. And yet, the closer we get, we stir up the other stuff, and we have to work through that, you know? And so it's a very exciting time. It's very difficult, but it's also just an opportunity to really be alive rather than surviving.
And you know, one of the things that I am finding greater and greater interest in these days our past lives. Now, is there any way you can use numerology to help sort of uncover past lives, to help, you know, understand what a past life might have been and how it might apply to this lifetime?
There's quite a bit in there. And there's quite a bit woven throughout that specifically addresses karma. And then, but, you know, whatever we're working on has a past because we're here. And if we're here, that means something isn't complete. So anything, you know, any of the numbers have a kind of karmic meaning. And the way I've approached it is, you know, the traditional way in numerology is you have the positive and the negative and the destructive, something like that. And the way I've tried to present it is the assertive, the passive, and the harmonious. And it goes back again to the dance. You know, each lesson, for example, one is the number of individuality. One, if there's too much individuality, it can be ego and pride, and then willfulness, and you're trying too hard to press your will forward or to press your will upon someone else and, you know, and overpower their will and take control. Mm-hmm. There can be a karmic meaning in the one in that you have not asserted your willfulness And then the other side of the number one is lack of will and indifference and insecurity and letting other people tell you what to do and being pushed around. That would be the passive side of one. So the balance of the one would be, to acknowledge your own willfulness, to acknowledge your own assertiveness, to acknowledge your own strength, but be aware that each of us has that, and to recognize and to honor that individuality and that will in others, and then you dance together. You don't try to overpower. You're not overpowered by them. You're not threatened. And then you work together, and you have two wills working together, which is like 10 times more powerful, not 2 times more powerful. And
oh,
you can
absolutely.
Imagine if you have, you can imagine the dance if you have a whole planet of people working in harmony, the possibilities, you know. And that's
oh my
what
God,
I think
yeah.
we're beginning to understand.
I sure hope so, because I know humanity
well,
is.
Too. I think we're on the threshold of a big dance. And,
yeah, well,
you know,
yeah.
Where people, where we work in harmony and we don't compete and we don't, you know, try to control and overcome. We don't have to have more than someone else. We, you know, we share and everyone blossoms and benefits. And I think that we're on the threshold of that, understanding that. And then a world of prosperity and a world of light and dancing and joy and we should be playing, you know. It should be like a playground.
It
shouldn't
should be
so dark and oppressive and dreary and abusive and toxic.
Well, do you think people come into this lifetime with those severe issues because they're ready to get rid of them, and this is a good place to get rid of them?
Well, that's one of the teachings, you know, that sometimes I just think this planet sucks, you know. And then there are teachers that say, well, au contraire, my son, that it is one of the most revered and one of the most desirable places in the galaxy, because you can come here. It's like a graduate school, and it's not a pit hole, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You can come here, and you can learn so many things on so many dimensions in one setting. And in that sense, it's an incredible opportunity. And I think sometimes we forget that when we're in our own darkness and we get pissed and angry and cut off and afraid and all those, you know, traits of denial and rage and anger. And I know I've lost sight sometimes, and I just get really frustrated. And
that's true, but at the same time, this is a place where you have the option for joy and for love and for celebration. And so many people get so stuck in the other on the other side that they don't really understand that it's their option. They can choose joy, they can choose love, they can choose to dance instead of hiding in a corner in the darkness. I think there is a great deal, there's a lot of sadness and a lot of disharmony in the world, but there are also those that are standing around speaking about the joy of sharing and the joy of love and the joy of communion and the joy of communication. And I think that your book and your philosophy goes a great distance in helping people to find out how they can get the harmony back into their life, how they can join the dance.
That would be the intent.
Yeah.
That would be my intent is to inspire the desire for reconnection to what I call the core. And to me,
mm-hmm.
the core is that part of us which is eternal, and that part of us which does reflect that dance. You know that I believe that our core is kind of like a trinity. It's like a primal. I call it the primal or perpetual atom. And
mm-hmm.
within that core, there is that reflection of the dance, and there's the three attributes of deity. There's the desire to expand, there's the desire to contract, and there's the desire for this to be in balance, the three, you know, the three in a constant dance. And that would, as best I picture it and as best I aspire to be there, I've tried to convey that in the work and encourage and to present to the reader encouragement to reunite with the dance, as I am in the process of trying to do myself.
Well, I think all of us are trying to do that. And actually, yeah, at creation, you know, as our spirit comes back into each lifetime, there is the memory of the melody that is there. And it is sort of up to us this lifetime to sort of draw that melody out into our reality so that we can experience it and we can experience the balance. And numerology does help you to find where you need to have that balance, and it gives you an idea of how to work on finding that balance within yourself. I mean, in many ways, numerology is a wonderful tool for self-analysis.
Yeah. Ooh. Excuse me, I tried to take a drink of water and went down the wrong tube.
Oh, I hate that.
But I'd have to agree, you know, absolutely, that's the whole message, that it's time to get back in harmony and do that dance, and I hope I can find the right windpipe before we're over here.
I'm sure you can, but you know that what I think also is amazing that it, you know, we aren't partnering so much with each other as we are partnering with the Creator, and
exactly,
and it's not like I would think that numerology could help you also with relationships and finding, you know, finding ways to get through or to connect with someone that you have that emotional physical connection to, but you want to have something even further above and beyond that, and it gives you a way of sort of isolating areas that you know need to be worked on, and gives you the opportunity to work on them.
Yeah, I would agree. I actually have another book that's become rather obscure. It's called Numerology: Nuances in Relationships.
Oh.
And it's that very thing. It's your number in relationship to someone else, you know. So there's what I call the inner relationship, and then the external relationship. So it's numerology in terms of a one with a one partner, or a one with a two partner, or a one with a three partner, or and so on.
Mm-hmm.
That leads back to where we started, that it starts by understanding ourselves and finding a point of harmony within ourselves, and then the next step is, okay, how do we interact with those around us? And by looking at their numbers and understanding their numbers and the interaction of the numbers, you can become more understanding, and it can open up communication, and it can point out a strategy of how we can work together. Because another facet of numerology that I totally introduced is called stress numbers. And stress number, it's the difference between the numbers. So it's the, like, for example, it's the difference between a one and a two.
Mm-hmm.
and the unconscious conflict between them. And then when you understand that, you put the one and the two together, and you have three. So the stress numbers, again, are a little bit like unconscious conflicts, or it's what you're overcoming to let the relationship work together, whether it's a one and a seven, or a two and a six, or a three and a nine, or whatever. But it all, again, comes down. In the end, it's all very simple, you know. It's either too much or too little or just right, and that is the dance. And when you're on rhythm, then you're when you're on rhythm with yourself, then you're going to be on rhythm with those around you. And
do you think we are intuitively drawn to people who will help us to grow and stretch, and that there is a sense of you have this, either the same things to work on or similar things, or we trigger awareness in the other person? Do you think there's an intuitive being attracted to someone who will give you the opportunity to stretch and grow, and you will do the same for them?
Yes, absolutely. I would call that the law of attraction. So if you're toxic, you're going to attract someone who reflects your toxicity. And the more toxic, the more toxic the people around you. And then as you clear that out, you attract those who complement you and who expand your awareness and bring more out of you. And then in return, you provide them, or you... It's an exchange, and you also are helping them to expand and find something within themselves. And the two of you are greater for having shared that moment. And that exchange is far greater than two people. It's like when you do that, it's like tenfold, or it's an exponential experience. So, yeah, you do attract to you who and what you are. And of course, I come from a therapeutic background, and I deal a lot in toxicity, and I see it maybe more than other people because I worked in the unconscious with so many thousands of people. But what is happening, I think, is that we are beginning to recognize and acknowledge these patterns of toxicity and identify them. And then when they become conscious, you have a choice. You can let go of them and move into a more healthy and more expanded awareness. But if you are not conscious, then you can live in denial. And, I've been in this business of New Age for a long time, and I've listened to hundreds of people talk about unconditional love and joy and this and that, and they aren't living it because they're in denial and they have not resolved the dark side. So I'm a big believer that wholeness comes when you acknowledge the dark side, let it come out into awareness, and work it through. It's not by pretending that you're full of light and love and everything's fine when you're full of crap, which I've seen a lot of instances. And quite honestly, I became aware of that in my own life way back when I was telling you about my own breakthrough, where I realized that a lot of my issues came from being in an alcoholic background, and there were a lot of things that I had totally denied, and anger and resentment and pain and insecurity and shame and guilt and a whole host of things that I was not aware of, uh-huh. And I was in the field for several years, and I had this vision of myself that I was this great spiritual teacher, and I was running around the world teaching these great things. And I suddenly realized I'm full of crap, And I was doing a workshop, and I had to say that, I thought all this time I was running around and I had these great things to say. And I realized I've been running around because I need to hear it and look at myself and deal with my stuff. And I'm going home. And I did. I went off the circuit for a while because, I finally had to realize I'm not living what I say either. I'm totally in denial, and I'm talking about these wonderful things, but I'm not there. And so I've pulled out for quite a while, and I've been wrestling a long time with my own dark side, and I've come to some points of reconciliation and acceptance, and I feel now just on the threshold of blossoming into something that I'm not quite sure, but like so many people are feeling, it's just so close, and it's so exciting, and it's really scary.
Well, sure, and I think that part of what I'm learning anyhow is that I'm in a process just like everybody else is, and I learn from everybody that I talk to, and hopefully, you know, they pick up something of worth from me as well. But you're right. I think that we have to go through our own dark times in order to be able to, in many ways, be compassionate and empathetic to people who are going through their dark times. And I think it's important.
Yeah.
Be able to say, you know, I do understand it. There is a light at the end of the tunnel. Trust me, I've seen it, and I have moments when I'm definitely in it. But it's a process, and I think it's something that we approach and that we experience with the intensity that we are, you know, ready for at that moment in time. I think that it's an ongoing process. And every time you think, it's sort of like cleaning the house. Once you get done with all the dust and the dirt, you sit back and you say, oh my, isn't it beautiful? And before you know it, it's dusty and dirty again. And it's only,
I like that analogy. Yeah, I like that.
And it's like, darn, I thought I had arrived. And the reality is, nah, you just got another level that you arrived at. That's all. There's another. It's like an onion. There's always another level that you can deal with.
Yep.
And you know, when you are totally in Christ consciousness and stuff like that, trust me, you won't be here on this planet. So,
I pretty much would have to agree with that from observation. I think there might be some enlightened ones that can do it. I sort of say the same thing that when I'm working with clients and I'm seeing it in my own life, the way I say it is each time we go higher or expand in consciousness or go greater into the light, we go equal and opposite into the dark side, and we bring that up out of the dark side that has been hidden and denied and pushed away for, in some cases, like tens of thousands of years, perhaps. And that's the kind of thing we're wrestling with, because you talked about having empathy with your people you work with. And I've been involved in healing now since the 70s. And one of the things that I always say at the end, especially the synergy session, is I will tell my clients, now there may be reaction, such as headache or nausea or diarrhea or combinations of these or some other, you know, healing crisis. And then they've gone through some pretty, you know, intense reactions. And I was a bit indifferent, and partly because I realized now I was in denial and I just hid a lot of my own pain. And recently, I can give an example to people of what can happen, is because I thought I was pretty cool and pretty clear, and then just not, a few weeks ago I went into a major crisis, and at the same time I had a massive diarrhea and gas pains, you know, just horrific gas pains. At the same time I had a urinary infection. So that I felt like I had to urinate about every 10 minutes, but it hurt. So I didn't want to, but I had to, but it hurt. And while that was going on, at the same time, I developed an excruciating pain in my lower back and the back left side. And over the years, I've had a lot of clients talk about sciatica pain. That's where I just couldn't understand it. I just couldn't understand that kind of pain. Well, this was beyond belief excruciating. It was so bad. I was just on the edge of nausea for days in a row. And fortunately, I was living with someone there were two people in the house who did different kind of energy and body work. And finally, they got on me and we started working on it. And then it just opened up and I just had to get off the table. And it was so bad that all I could do was just get down on the floor and I just rolled around. I was completely helpless and in excruciating pain like I can't even imagine. And I didn't know what to do. You know, I was supplicating and I was swearing and I was begging and I was doing affirmations and I was praying. And then that led into a series of, I don't know, maybe 10 or 15 minutes of just prolonged primal screaming, which I'd never been able to do. And I just, you know, I finally had to go in the utility room and shut the doors because I was afraid I was going to scare the neighbors half to death. And that went on, and went, I don't know, maybe 5, perhaps 10 minutes. And then came just, you know, enormous tears and crying, and then finally the pain still wasn't gone. I went in to take a hot bath, which had usually helped with the pain, and that didn't help. And then I went into a series of toning, and all of a sudden I hit the right tone, and poof, it was all gone. But that was like 4 days of what I call healing hell, you know. And it just has given me a completely different sense of, as you were saying, empathy and understanding to people who go through this. And this is the kind of thing that people are going to go through now, you know, because as we get closer to our connection and to that oneness, we go equal and opposite into the dark side. And we stir that stuff up, you know, and it comes out through the body. It comes out psychologically. It comes out emotionally. And then as we release that, then comes the light and the laughter and the joy. And that I'm feeling more now than I ever have, because I won't say I've got it all out, but that was just for me a huge step that I thought, well, I cleared all that stuff out a long time ago. But it's just it's the same thing I would say to my clients. You did a wonderful job, and the fact that you did a wonderful job is the proof in your discomfort, you know, because you've done a wonderful job of clearing that out, and you brought a whole other, excuse me, but I would say the S word, but we can't on air, so I'll say poop load, a whole poop load of stuff to the surface, and be thankful, you know. And now it's conscious, you can let it go, and then you become the living light rather than pretending to be the living light. Big difference.
Oh yeah, absolutely. But you know, I think people can sense those who have an authenticity and those that don't. I mean, some of the people that claim to have that authenticity, you know, first of all, if they have to tell you how authentic they are, the chances are they're not.
Yeah,
but,
over and over and
yes.
over.
but there is that sense of genuine compassion with some of these people, and I am finding that some of the most well known actually don't seem to have the authenticity as some of the people that are, you know, going under the radar, and people don't really, you know, see their name and think, oh, big bucks, let's go. And it's those people that I find to be the masters, that I find to be the people you want to sit and talk to, that they're the people that are living examples of what we should be going through.
Well, that's what I'm seeing. And the people that are drawn to me and the people I'm working with, I've just had a series of extremely powerful people that in their particular way of life, they're prominent, they're powerful, they're influential, and we're being poised because times are going to get, there's going to be upheaval and there's going to be chaos, and we're going to be called, and as you say, those who have the authenticity are going to be really busy because people are going to recognize that, and they're going to be drawn to people who live and speak the truth. And there are many people that are being called now to be in that position because, you know, governments aren't going to be able to give us security. Money's not going to be able to give us security. It's going to come from within, and it's going to come as a connection to what I call our true core self, or I'm calling it kind of the perpetual atom the perennial atom, you know, that part of us that continues forever. And when we operate out of our truth and our true core ongoing self, then people will recognize that, and those who are authentic will come together And there will be an enormous power and an enormous expansion of light and radiation and confidence and joy, even in the midst of a society and a world that on some levels is totally crumbling. And that's what I'm seeing, that we're in that, right on that cusp and going into that time. And so many people now are being called to be ready to serve.
Oh, I would agree. When you look at the world situation and things that are going on, it's sort of like how can a world that has been around, or societies that have been around for 4,000 or 6,000 years have come to this point in time with the inhumanity to man that is going on. I mean,
I know.
I've stopped looking at the news. Well, Jeannie looks at the news, and Jeannie is the one who keeps me kind of up on what's going on, because it's so depressing. It's so sad.
Well,
and
it's also just a lot of lies.
Well, yeah.
The information that we're being given, for the most part, it's just almost all disinformation and lies. So you've got to learn, to trust your inner self. And the other test that I think we'd agree on is discernment. To listen between the lies and to discern and to use your discernment to recognize those who are authentic and to be empowered and to share empowerment with those who are authentic and those who are living the truth and those who are living the light. And that's also what's happening, is that we're starting to find each other and connect and form a what I think will be a very powerful network in time of chaos and confusion and upheaval and that sort of thing.
Well, you recently just moved too, so that you could be in a different geographic location.
Yeah, I'm in a setting that. I chose it for several reasons. One of them because using astrocartography, and one of the two things that appealed to me. One of them is it said that one of the things that just happened and is happening is that it's going to bring a lot of your hidden issues with your parents and with your dark side. It's going to accelerate that and bring it to the surface, which certainly has happened. And as a result of that, your work will become stronger and more authentic, and people will recognize that and respond, which is happening. And your intuition is going to be extremely accurate, which has happened where I'm at. It's just my work has just been spot right on when I, in terms of one-on-one client relationships. And I just sense it, it's just the information comes easily and fluidly, and as it goes through, I just know in my heart it's accurate, and they know in their heart it's accurate. And so I've found a spot that's it's doing the things I'm talking about. It is accelerating these things, and I, one of them being the healing crisis that I just described, because, I didn't anticipate it being that heavy and that dramatic, because I thought I was pretty cool and I thought I'd worked it out. It's like, whoa, okay.
You found your earth connection for sure. And there's
I
a
think
wonderful.
So for the moment, yeah, it's a good place for the moment. I don't know how long I'll be here, but for the moment, it's a very beautiful area. And I am connecting. It is helping me to make the connection that we've been describing and that I desire within myself, and it is accelerating it on the dark side and on the light side.
Well, I think we all have stuff inside that sometimes we don't even recognize, and that going through the kind of catharsis you went through is a fabulous thing. It sounds. I think it was a bit more extreme than I would want.
Well,
to
I wouldn't have told. I wouldn't have said that when I was in it.
No. Well, catharsis. It cleans you. It cleanses you.
Now, I'm really thankful, and I'm glad to be on this side of it. And I wouldn't want to go through too many of those. And I do. You know, the word that you said that caught my attention is that it has awakened within me a much greater sense of empathy, which I just did not have, because I thought that I had worked it through, but I realized now I had hidden a lot of my own pain, and so I couldn't identify with what people were saying, because I hid it and I wouldn't allow myself to experience it. And now that I've been through that, I have a whole different appreciation of people who are in pain, because it was just excruciating, you know. I told you, I was just, all I could do is just fall over on the floor helplessly in excruciating pain that I could never have imagined. And I had gone through surgery, you know, back in 98 for blood clots, and that was pretty bad. Well, this was much greater and far beyond that, you know. I mean, I was just on the point of paralysis almost, that I was for 2 or 3 days that it was so bad I was on the edge of nausea, and then it just, when it finally came to a finale, and so I've come out of it much softer and much, I think, more patient. And the word that I heard you say that just struck in my accord in my heart is much more empathy.
Yeah, that's definitely a quality that's so important, especially for a healer. And I know that you know, just lately with Patrick passing away, it gave me a greater sense of understanding when counseling anyone that experienced a loss. You know, I've lost my mother and my father, but that's different when you lose a spouse or a child. That's a part of you, and I think though that with that particular situation, it's not easy, but what made it I guess easier is the only way to say it, is that I really know that he's in a better place. I know that he's out of pain. I know that he's in a place where he is surrounded by love and compassion and empathy. He's in a place that is so perfect for him that it's unbelievable. So, you know, I can't do that for him. It's sort of like I wouldn't want him back, not for anything, because where he is now is perfect for him. So, you know, I continue to work and know that someday I'll get to that place too. But
too. Well, I've been out there and I've experienced it, you know, and I'd like to get back there. And sometimes the call, you know, sometimes it's like you just like to escape and get out of this mess and be there, but you can't shortcut it, I don't think. I think you have to do it in your...
You can't shortcut it. And I think that when I talk to people who have experienced loss and they say, oh, I'm just going to commit suicide, I say, oh, I wouldn't go there. You'll find yourself right back here all over again and have to start all over again. No. Work it through.
That seems to be the standard notion, and it makes sense.
You've got to go full term with the whole process. But we are getting close to being out of time. I want to thank you so very much. This has been such a cool evening.
For me too. I hope we didn't lose our audience.
No, they're still here. I think, again, the name of your book is The Heart of Numerology. I highly, highly, highly recommend it. I did also put the link in the chat room for The Cosmic Doctrine, because that looks like a fascinating book as well.
Yeah, if it appeals to someone that's listening, I would highly recommend it, because it's an extraordinary volume.
Well, I thank you so much for taking the time to share all of your expertise with us, because you're a well that could never be totally empty, and there's so much information here in all of this. Maybe in 6 months to a year you'll come back and do this again with me.
Yep, love to.
Well, I thank you so much.
I've enjoyed it very much too.
Well, it's always a pleasure to talk with you. I learned so much, and kindred spirits. It's kind of fun. You're coming from a different modality.
Yeah.
but I do suspect our message is the same.
Yeah, I think so. I've enjoyed. Thanks for inviting me.
Oh, it was my pleasure, and I want to thank everybody who's listening. I want to thank everybody in the chat room and everybody who is listening out there. We totally enjoyed this experience. This is Nightlight Matrix, and we will be on again next week with James Luce and Mary Peeler, and we will be going into mediumship and how it is developed and how we have experienced it, and we will share with you our highs and our lows and our pitfalls and where we've fallen on our face. And I totally, we want to sort of give you an inside look at a medium and what goes on within us as we discover that we are talking to people who have passed over. So thank you so much for being here tonight. We will be back next Wednesday, and I will be on Friday with James Luce. So look forward to that. He's an amazing man. So I will sign off now, and thank you so much for being with us for this first show. Good night now.